This is AWLS, podcasts on wilderness medicine from the University of Utah School of Medicine.
This is Thomas Cartwright with the Kansas City University College of Osteopathic Medicine in Kansas City, Missouri. Today we have for you the topic of bandages and creams, and we'll be covering all the basics of both and giving some recommendations as to which ones we recommend and for what general purposes they serve. In the world of bandages, the gauze family is the one that most people are probably familiar with. Gauze is a light, open-weave fabric that is usually made of cotton. It's good for helping keep wounds dry and protected from the environment in terms of large particulates. However, due to this light, open weave that it does have, it is not perfect at preventing all contamination, as smaller bacteria and particulates that are smaller than the weave pattern can get into the wound. Gauze comes in three main forms, the first of which is a gauze roll, which, as the name implies, is a long strand of gauze that is rolled up and comes in many different widths. The perks of this is that you can use it to wrap, to layer, to pad, and that you can cut the individual strands of gauze down to whatever size you may need for the task at hand. Next is the gauze square or the gauze pad, and this is just simply a square of gauze that is typically a few layers thick and can be used for cleaning or padding wounds. Lastly is the more specialty style of gauze called the occlusive gauze. And what this is, it's the same gauze as previously mentioned, just it's impregnated with a petroleum-based compound, typically something similar to Vaseline. And what this is going to do is not only is it going to be able to cover and protect the wound, it's actually going to provide an impenetrable barrier from the environment. And this barrier actually goes both ways. So it's also going to trap moisture into the wound, which in turn is going to help to create a better environment for wound healing, and in certain wounds can actually shorten the time it takes for them to heal overall. Occlusive gauze comes in pads and rolls as well, although the pads are by far the most common form. Owing to its relatively low cost and small form factor, both gauze pads and occlusive gauze is something that I absolutely recommend for anyone's first aid kit. Next we have the compression bandages. And these all will have some degree of elasticity to them. The most common one that you're probably familiar with is the Crepe bandage, also known by its brand name as the Ace Wrap or the Ace bandage. These bandages are typically an elasticated woven cotton, which is primarily good for the support of sprains and strains. They are also quite handy in securing other bandages to the wounds and creating a general compression. The cotton allows the skin to breathe, and these bandages are washable and reusable. However, their one big downside is that if you are looking to support a sprain or a strain, given that they are elastic in nature, they will not completely immobilize a joint, necessitating the use of some other item like a splint if full immobilization is your goal. Then we have the emergency bandage, which can also be known as the Israeli bandage. These are very similar to our ACE wrap. However, the main difference is that on top of the compression aspect, we also have a sterile, non-adhesive pad that is either stuck or sewn into the bandage itself. These products are designed with the intention of being able to create pressure on top of a wound. Some products will even have an integrated pressure bar, which is designed to help maintain a higher level of pressure even once you've removed your hands beyond what the elastic itself is able to provide. But these can complicate application during stressful times, and thus companies such as North American Rescue have elected to omit these pressure bars from their products. These are wonderful products, and they can definitely help in a stressful time when maybe you need to create pressure on a wound but don't always have an extra set of hands, or you need to do something else while pressure is being maintained. Saying that, one downside is that if these products are applied too tightly, due to the elastic nature, you can create a tourniquet effect. So always be cautious when applying any sort of compression bandage to make sure that you still have pulses distal or downstream from the bandage you've applied, just to make sure that you've not applied it too tight and that the limb is still receiving appropriate blood flow. Next in line, we have the triangular bandage. And as the name implies, this is a large triangular-shaped bandage that has many uses in the backcountry. While the triangular bandage is most commonly used as a sling for an upper extremity injury, it is still a bandage and thus can be used as a dressing for wounds or to immobilize other fractures and dislocations. Another use of a triangular bandage, although this is not something that I personally recommend, is that it can be used to make an improvised tourniquet. While these tourniquets can be quite effective when applied properly, mainstream tourniquets like the Combat Application or CAT tourniquet can be acquired for about $30 on the internet and are much simpler to use in a stressful situation. Overall, the triangular bandage is an extremely versatile bandage that I do highly recommend everyone has in a medical kit. They pack relatively small and can be purchased on the internet for no more than a dollar or two apiece. Next on the list we have the tube bandage, and as the name implies, this type of bandage is a round length of cotton with typically some level of elasticity that can essentially be cut to length and slipped over an injury. While these bandages are certainly not the most common ones out there, they do have some perks as they can provide 360-degree compression of an injury and are also well used for strains and sprains. Given that they typically come in a larger roll and need to be cut down to size, these are not the most convenient bandage to carry into the backcountry, but I figured I should mention them just for sake of completeness. The next bandage on our list is the one that I'm sure all listeners will be familiar with, and this is the adhesive bandage. The adhesive bandage, or band-aids, are generally plastic or fabric adhesive bands that have a sterile cotton piece in the center. They come in all shapes and sizes, as well as colors, and you can even get ones that have different cartoon characters on them for kids. One of these types of adhesive bandages is called the kirigami bandage, and what these are is something that is really no different than the typical band-aid. However, they have specific cuts and they're shaped in ways that helps to allow the adhesive portion to form better around parts of the body that move. An example of this would be a band-aid that is able to wrap around the fingers so that you can cover your knuckle but still be able to move that knuckle. Adhesive bandages do really well for those small cuts and scrapes where you think that it needs to be covered, and also can provide a little bit of help with stopping bleeding. The biggest con to the band-aid is that some people can be allergic to the adhesive, myself being one of these people. And as well, if you do have some of the clot that forms into the cotton pad, when you take the band-aid off, you can tear bits of the clot, and that can be quite painful. While all bandages have a place in the first aid kit and in the backcountry, I personally believe that the band-aid or the adhesive bandage is one that is the absolute must and everyone must carry in their own personal kits. As we start to round out the list of the different kinds of bandages, one that have become increasingly popular, yet not fully universally used, are the liquid bandages. Liquid bandages are generally a polymer which is dissolved in water or an alcohol base that, when applied to a wound, creates a thin film over it. This thin film creates a barrier to the environment and is especially useful in those hard-to-cover areas, as well as for general minor cuts and scrapes. These liquid formulations typically are either painted or sprayed on. Once you have applied a liquid bandage, however, you should not put any other sort of ointment or cream on top of it, as this can actually weaken the bandage itself and create breakdown. Last on our list, we have the burn bandage or the burn dressing, and there are many options in this category, and they all have their own unique aspects which make them useful. In general, these dressings are very similar to our previously mentioned occlusive gauze, with the only real difference being the specific compounds that the gauze is impregnated with. These dressings are typically moisturizing and antimicrobial in some sense, as you have things like the hydrocolloid dressings such as Duoderm, or a hydrogel-based dressing such as Aquaderm. And on top of those, we have these silver impregnated dressings. While I do not find that a burn dressing specifically is required for a first aid kit in the backcountry, it is always something to be considerate of based on what your activities will be. While these dressings can be soothing for the mild to moderate burn in the backcountry, please know that burns can be very serious and life-threatening and should be treated as such. If you receive a burn severe enough to where you believe it needs a specific burn dressing, I would recommend that you please seek help from a medical professional. This concludes our talk on bandages, and we'll now move on to the creams. As with the topic of bandages, creams and ointments is a rather large topic, but we're going to go through some of the big key points. First off, we have what are called the emollients, and these are things that are going to soothe dry skin and irritation. Emollients are common ingredients in moisturizers, and they are great for conditions where scaling or dryness is present, things like eczema or psoriasis. Under this umbrella of emollients, we have two main ingredients, the first of which are called humectants, and these are things that attract and bind water to the skin, increasing the moisture. They are generally water soluble, which means that they wash off easily, and they tend to feel lighter and less greasy on one's skin. Examples of humectants are things like glycerin, hyaluronic acid, propylene glycol, or aloe vera. Occlusives are the next main category under the emollient umbrella, and these are going to be things that form a thick coating on the skin. They are not water soluble, which means they don't wash off easily. They are great at creating a barrier that can keep out things, but at the same time, they don't do anything necessarily to hydrate your skin other than keep water in via that physical barrier. The most common things that classify as occlusives are going to be our petroleum jellies, mineral oil, or lanolin. As a general class, the emollients are best applied after a warm shower when you've patted your skin dry, and you apply them to areas where you have the dry and scaling skin. Overall, there are very few risks to applying emollients to yourself, the main ones being allergic reactions or irritation. Additionally, in those who have more sensitive skin, the occlusives, being that they trap in everything, can worsen acne. So if you're a person who is acne sensitive, you want to look for products that are labeled non-comedogenic or non-acnogenic. Additionally, when looking to select an emollient, not all brands are created equal, and there are some additives that you might want to look at the ingredient label to try to avoid. Things that are really common to irritate your skin are alcohols, dyes or colors, fragrances, and also essential oils. So while some of these creams may smell nice, in the long run, if they do contain these additives, they might be doing your skin a little bit of a disservice. Given that I've just talked about emollients as a general class, here are some ideas of name brands that you might be familiar with. So under things that would classify as humectants, we have your CeraVe or Cetaphil moisturizing creams, also Eucerin Advanced Repair Cream, and any of the numerous brands that sell something along the lines of a hyaluronic acid cream. As for our name brand occlusives, these are going to be things like mineral oil or baby oil, as well as Vaseline and Aquaphor. Now, Aquaphor is a unique one in this category of occlusives because Aquaphor itself does also contain a humectant, glycerin. As such, you can see Aquaphor as, in a simple sense, the best of both worlds in that you get the heavy occlusiveness of the petroleum jelly with some of the moisturizing benefits of the glycerin. When it comes to making recommendations in the emollient class, the best option is really going to be dependent on the situation. When it comes to a moisturizer for the dry, itchy, or flaky skin, a cream that contains a humectant is going to be a better option. My personal choice is CeraVe, however the Cetaphil brand products are also absolutely wonderful. When my goal is to cover a wound and help to keep it moist and sort of a barrier from the outside environment, I lean more towards the occlusives, of which both Vaseline and Aquaphor are great options. However, I tend to choose Aquaphor over Vaseline, simply because of that humectant effect of the added glycerin. In terms of what I personally carry in first aid kits when going into the backcountry, I always have Aquaphor on me, but I don't always have a moisturizing cream like a CeraVe or a Cetaphil. I feel that the Aquaphor just has more uses and is a better bang for the buck in terms of weight and space taken up. One of the alternative uses for Aquaphor is that it burns extremely well given its petroleum base, and when added to something like a cotton ball can greatly assist in trying to start a fire. Having mentioned fire, that brings me to the burn creams and the burn gels. Burn creams are going to be an emollient, typically of an occlusive base, that's going to contain some sort of analgesic like lidocaine and some sort of antimicrobial like Bactracin. Neosporin Burn Relief is a perfect example of this. These are great for the small, minor burns that one may sustain in the backcountry. Burn gels, on the other hand, are marketed a little bit differently as these are more in the lines of sunburns, and they're going to contain higher percentages of lidocaine than the burn creams, and also typically humectants such as aloe vera to help promote moisturizing of the skin. When it comes to deciding what is the best for the backcountry, I personally prefer burn creams as I think they're a little more universal and are better suited to help with pain relief as well as treating the types of burns that we are most likely to encounter. Burn gels are great for those superficial sunburn type injuries, but do not have as much of the healing potential due to the lacking of an occlusive. As such, if you've determined that you find it necessary to have a burn cream or gel in your first aid kit, I would highly recommend something along the lines of a burn cream. Next in line, we have the antibiotic ointments. While the favorite of many for the past decades, these are slowly falling out of favor due to increasing antibiotic resistance, but I feel that they are important to cover nonetheless. In general, these products will have some sort of petroleum base, so therefore on our occlusive side of things, and then contain 2 to 3 different kinds of antibiotics. While there are no real downsides to these creams aside from the evolving antibiotic resistance, the ingredients can cause dermatitis or a kind of a basic skin allergic reaction in some, and therefore should be used sparingly. If your goal is to prevent infection of a wound, then I think as a better alternative, we should look to the honey ointments. As in the name, these are of a honey base, and they are safe, natural, and quite effective at inhibiting bacterial growth. They can treat a wide range of skin issues, everything from small burns, scratches, to boils or ulcers, and they are becoming quite popular as they do not have the same sort of antibiotic resistance as seen in the antibiotic ointments. On top of the antimicrobial effects of honey, the honey also acts as an occlusive in that it creates a layer over the wound, which prevents bacteria from entering the wound and prevents the wound from dehydrating. Honey is high in glucose or sugar, which on one hand acts as a humectant, helping to draw water to the surface and promoting wound healing, but the glucose itself also helps to feed the cells as they go through their healing process. When looking to purchase a honey ointment, there is such thing as medical grade honey, which is just going to help you ensure that the product has been sterilized appropriately and is free from toxins and contaminants. There are brands like MediHoney or Manuka Honey Ointment that qualify under this medical grade honey. When it comes to which style of antibiotic ointment to purchase for the backcountry, I personally believe more in the honey ointments than the antibiotic ointments, and this is due to the multiple uses of the honey ointment itself in terms of burns, cuts, scrapes, as well as the better antimicrobial profile. And with that, we are going to wrap things up today on the Advanced Wilderness Life Support podcast on bandages and creams. Before we sign off, I'm just going to leave you with the 4 rules of bandaging. First off, we always want to properly clean and dress our wound. We then want to cover the wound with some sort of bandage. And third, secure that bandage in place. Once we have secured our bandage, we must always, always make sure that we are checking circulation, especially when the bandage is on an extremity, as we want to make sure that by placing our bandage, we are helping things and not inadvertently making them worse in the end. This ends the podcast on bandages and creams. Thank you for listening.